Mercy Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate. Kia ora and welcome to our Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, our programs, or about social justice. Currently, we are all called to inform ourselves on the issue of euthanasia, as the New Zealand government has asked for submissions to support the parliamentarians in their decision on whether to legalize euthanasia or not. Therefore, I have decided to repeat an interview that I did last year with David Richmond. Professor David Richmond is a retired physician and inaugural professor of geriatric medicine at the University of Auckland. He is also the founder and the chair of the Hope Foundation. End of July 2014, Professor David Richmond and Sister Kathy Lynch gave a presentation in our Mercy Spirituality Center with the title Merciful Care Instead of Merciful Killing. David, you founded the Hope Foundation, which does research on the aging population.
Yes, that's correct.
What a beautiful and positive way to talk about it. As Professor of Geriatric Medicine, you focus on health care of people when they get older.
Yes.
How, have you always been interested in caring for this age group?
Well, no, I haven't actually. I started out doing specializing in kidney medicine in the days when kidney transplants and dialysis were just beginning. Mm-hmm. And it really wasn't until the 1980s that I gradually became more and more interested in the needs of older people. And then I was appointed professor of geriatric medicine. And one of the tasks I had to do was to build an academic unit, because there wasn't any such thing at that time in Auckland.
So you were the first.
So I was I was the inaugural professor. Mm.
And you have a passion for life and against euthanasia. In fact, the word euthanasia means good death. In Wikipedia, it is defined as a deliberate intervention undertaken with the express intention of ending a life to relieve intractable suffering. But in the Netherlands, it is also the termination of life by a doctor at the request of a patient. Do you agree with these definitions?
Well, there are always going to be differences between a philosophical understanding of euthanasia, which is where the Wikipedia definition is coming from, and the description used in legislation to govern its practice. Now, in Holland, in fact, there is no mention of euthanasia or assisted suicide in their legislation. It's termed, quotes, voluntary termination of life. And euthanasia is, in fact, shorn of all its qualifications, the killing of one person by another person in order to relieve unbearable suffering. Now, Wikipedia says nothing at all about a voluntary aspect to euthanasia. Mm-hmm. All it tells us is that the perpetrator is doing it with the express intention of killing the sufferer. In practice, it turns out that it may be voluntary, that is, at the request of the sufferer, or involuntary, in the absence of a request. And if you carry this over to the Dutch definition, where only voluntary euthanasia is legal, they don't count non-voluntary or involuntary euthanasia in their euthanasia statistics at all. So it's quite tricky, actually, when you come to start comparing different countries, the practice of different countries with each other. You have to take into account what they count as being euthanasia and what you count as being euthanasia. And in, as I say, in Holland, it's quite different to most other places.
It's really a definition question.
It's a definition question, that's right.
You also talked about it a little bit during your presentation at our Mercy Spirituality Center, and we chose the title Merciful Care instead of Merciful Killing, Mercy and Compassion, as the result of ending someone's life?
Well, there's several ways one could respond to that. One is to say that a lot of what I hear concerns events that happened many years ago. One of my meetings recently, somebody was telling me the most horrendous story about a person who clearly didn't get enough painkilling medication to support them. And I just flashed in my mind, when did this happen? Oh, it was about 20 years ago. And so what's happening is that people are sort of building their philosophy on what happened 20 years ago. And you can't do that because medicine has changed a great deal. Much of which couldn't be controlled in the past is capable of being controlled now. So, in fact, you can't make a case for euthanasia now on the basis of pain. Even the most ardent euthanasia fans in private will admit that. They're still talking about it on the radio and so on because they know that's what stirs the public up. But in fact, behind the scenes, they're saying you can't really justify it now for pain because pain's control is so good.
So today there is enough medicine to really relieve the pain.
Yeah, yes. Well, it's not just medicine. It's the way it's used. It's the dosage it's used. It's where it's put. And there's a whole range of things now. It's a whole gamut of palliative care, really. It's a specialty in its own right. And pain relief is very, very effective these days.
And Sister Kathy Lynch, she agreed in regarding the pain and about the merciful care. She works at the Mercy Hospice and is specialized on palliative care.
Yeah.
And do you think that this merciful care, if that's really practiced like what Sister Kathy Lynch is doing and what the Mercy Hospice is practicing, do you think that this kind of merciful care can prevent merciful killing?
Well, there's no doubt, as I've already said, that in expert hands, physical suffering can be relieved to the extent that euthanasia isn't actually necessary. But that's not going to deter the advocates of legalizing euthanasia from continuing their campaign for two reasons. One is that they have widened the definition of, quote, suffering to include what we call existential suffering. That is suffering which is not actually related to pain or to physical causes. And so now in Holland and Belgium, for example, euthanasia can be requested and granted for all manner of suffering, including loneliness, a fear of the future, being a burden to others, depression and other psychiatric disorders. And you may have seen recently where a person applied for euthanasia on the basis of a sex change operation that went wrong. So, you know, all of these are called suffering. They're called terrible suffering. And so now people are asking for euthanasia for these things. So the other thing is that there are people in quite sizable numbers who demand euthanasia because they say it's their right to have euthanasia. It's their right to decide the manner and time of their death. And they justify that statement by maintaining that death is the only life decision that they have no control over.
For those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. The program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk or send me a mail at muffintalk840@gmail.com. My visitor today is Professor David Richmond. He facilitated a workshop in our Mercy Spirituality Center together with Sister Kathy Lynch. The workshop was called Merciful Care Instead of Merciful Killing. Professor David Richmond is a retired physician and inaugural professor of geriatric medicine at the University of Auckland. He has explained to us what the term euthanasia means and how important it is to be aware how differently it can be interpreted. There's a philosophic definition and a legal definition. And in fact, it means killing one person by another person. In some countries, it is added on a voluntary basis, and in others, it's neutral. It can be voluntary. It should be voluntary. But it's all a question of definitions. So different people with different intention define it differently. And one of the main reasons why many people are in favor of euthanasia is that they say it's to relieve the suffering. Professor Richmond said that the medicine has changed and there is enough pain relief to reduce the suffering. And its pain is controllable with today's medicine. But suffering is also another term that has to be defined because today it goes to existential suffering like loneliness and depression. But also then there are the advocates who want to see that right to define when they want to die and how they're going to die. So euthanasia is about, like you said, ending someone's life, but it yet is not called killing by most people. The term sounds like a real euphemism, a beautiful word to hide the meaning which could be hurtful. And in many countries, it is called the support of dying, assisted suicide, life of choice. This sounds very positive and implies definitely the longing for dying of the person concerned. Does this mean that euthanasia is only for people who can decide themselves, who can express their decision clearly, but don't have the physical ability to commit suicide?
Well, you're asking two questions here. The question of the euphemisms is quite an interesting one. The list you've given is by no means a total list. I've got a couple that I can think of. End-of-life choice is one that we hear. And medical assistance in dying is another one we hear. All in an attempt to hide the stark fact that we're actually talking about putting people to death. And the people who are advocating for that know that if you talk about suicide or killing, it's got a very negative effect. And so they use these euphemisms. And it's been definitely shown in public polls where if you use the term killing or assisted suicide or something like that in the question, you know, whether you would support it or not, then the support for that drops well below the 50% mark. But if you use a euphemism, say, assisting the patient to die in peace or something like that, then it jumps right up to about 75%, you see. So the way the question is worded makes a huge difference as to what people will agree with or disagree with. And I think it's highly cynical to use these terms like assisting people to die in peace when actually what they mean is killing them. But that's one question. The other issue, of course, is this question of whether it's only for people who can decide for themselves. I say quite unequivocally that euthanasia is for nobody. It should not be used at all.
Mm-hmm.
I have no problem with people asking for euthanasia, but I also state that the state has got, the country, the nation has got the right to say, no, we're not going to provide euthanasia, because the side effects of it, the outcomes of it, the unexpected problems that arise are so horrendous that once we let that genie out of the bottle, we'll never be able to get it back in again.
So you've seen already some warning signals.
Oh, well, you've only got to look at what's happening in Belgium and Germany Belgium and Holland and Luxembourg and Switzerland and places like that.
Can you give us some examples of what, looking at the countries like what you said, Netherlands and Belgium, where euthanasia is legal, can you give us some examples how it is practiced now?
Well, there's no doubt that there is a lot of euthanasia that goes on in those countries that is actually following the legally prescribed pattern of how to do it.
What is the legally prescribed?
Well, it's got to be voluntary.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got to be, in most countries, they have two doctors they have to sign it off, and a range of things that they cheerfully think are actually protective against euthanasia being abused. But in fact, it doesn't actually work like that way for a lot of people. For example, in Belgium in 2012, about 32% of deaths by euthanasia were not voluntary.
32%?
Yep, 32% of euthanasia deaths were not voluntary. So they weren't requested by anybody. Some doctor or nurse in a rest home or a hospital made a decision that that person's life was no longer of sufficient quality for them to go on living, and they just did it. They euthanized them. And in some cases, I was just reading recently, a doctor, a cardiologist in Holland, was telling about a patient of his who needed to go to hospital to get her heart failure stabilized. And she was very reluctant to do it because she said, I'm a Catholic, and we would not want euthanasia under any circumstances. He said, I'll make sure that you're safe in hospital. There'd be no problem whatsoever. So she goes into hospital. He goes and visits her, prescribes the medication and so on, and goes home. On his way home, he gets a phone call from a nurse who says that another doctor has come in and has increased the rate of pain-killing medication. And within a short period, she was dead. And when he tackled the other doctor to ask why he had done it, he said, well, she would have taken a long time to die under your care. I needed the bed. So for the most trivial reasons now, people can be killed in Holland and in Belgium. And it's no wonder that people are going to rest homes in Germany, as you were saying earlier, because they're not, they don't feel safe in Holland.
Yeah, that's in Germany, I know of German-Dutch border where they started to build rest homes for Germans and Dutch residents, and apparently many of the older Dutch citizens are afraid of euthanasia in their own country and are looking for a safe haven, like what you said with that lady. These people look for a safer haven on the other side of the border. And do you think this is a real warning signal of what an originally compassionate request has become today?
Oh, yes, I think there's no doubt about that. Just to finish off the last question, the other thing that's happening is that there's a high degree of non-reporting of euthanasia in every country where it's practiced, including the state of Oregon in the United States. Somewhere between 20% and 50% of cases of euthanasia are probably not reported to the authorities as it's supposed to be legally done. And so that means really that the authorities have got no idea of how the law is being obeyed. It also means that when they're trying to get statistics about what's happening, they can't use the official statistics. They've got to go in and use anonymous questionnaires so that the doctors are not exposed, and then they'll give a true answer, or hopefully give a true answer to the questions. So it's a very murky situation, really, that goes on in these countries. Now, as far as this, as your other question is concerned about the safe haven, well, I would say that there's no one in any of the places where euthanasia is legalized who is safe from being euthanized against their will.
No matter of age or...
No matter what's going on, yeah. It just seems to me that after a while, the whole national psyche seems to get inverted and death becomes the favoured option over life. And there have been calls here for similar changes in stance by people. People are telling us that the decent thing for old people to do is to request euthanasia. It's the altruistic thing to do, they tell us. There was
altruistic, that means that if they don't do it, they are considered as a burden or as...
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, if you prefer life, you're the selfish person. Mm-hmm. And there was an article published a couple of years ago, was I think in The Listener, tried to make this point that it's the people who are altruistic are the ones who are requesting euthanasia. Well, I mean, that's just turning the whole of our ethical understanding of life and death on its head.
Yes, absolutely. Mm. And do you think that euthanasia can also be seen as an easy way out for those, like you mentioned, with depression, disability, or the people who feel like they are a burden for their family or even the state or health system, or the hospital, like you said, where the doctor needed the bed for somebody else?
Well, it may be perceived as an easy way out by some people, but it isn't necessarily so. For example, research has shown that approximately 30% of deaths by euthanasia or assisted suicide are accompanied by some unwanted phenomenon. And that might be excessive vomiting, it might be fitting, it might be failing to go into a coma, and in some cases it's even waking up not dead. And so when you say about roughly a third of people who are euthanized have some kind of side effect, some problem, that's hardly dying with dignity. But that's the way people are talking about it. That's the way it's being pushed and published. You know, that's the only way to die with dignity is to be euthanized. But again, it's just absolute nonsense. As far as the state is concerned, that's an interesting one because euthanasia is so cheap. And many of the medicines that we use, you know, cancer and heart disease, many of the operations we have, even palliative care, are quite expensive. And in the state of Oregon, there's been recent publicity about two cases where people were refused a subsidy for their chemotherapy by the state of Oregon. But at the same letter that was refused, they were told that they would be subsidized for assisted suicide. It's unbelievable that could happen, but that's what's going on. So, I mean, this is clearly a situation where a state body is trying to save money by pushing assisted suicide.
So in reality, it's those who have the money to pay the treatments.
Yep.
They are safer than the ones who cannot pay.
I'm afraid you're right about that, yes.
What is the current situation in New Zealand?
Well, of course, as you know, euthanasia and assisted suicide are both illegal. For people who don't know what assisted suicide is, it's a situation where a doctor will prescribe a lethal medication for a patient to take home and take it themselves in private. So the doctor may be there when it happens. He or she may not be there. But that's the difference between euthanasia. Euthanasia requires a doctor or a nurse to actually give it because it's usually given by intravenous injection.
What is it on the medical, on the death certificate? Does it say euthanized?
Well, it depends which legislation you're looking at. The bill that was brought before the New Zealand Parliament the year before last, 2012, and which was withdrawn temporarily last year, that actually, that was a bill for assisted suicide, rather than euthanasia, although it allowed for a doctor to finish off the situation if it didn't work the first time. Sorry, what was your question again?
When this happens, what is on the
death certificate?
Yeah,
that's an interesting one, because this bill requires that that euthanasia does not appear on the death certificate, that the person is said to have died of the underlying condition which caused them to have the euthanasia in the first place, and that also happens in Oregon and I think some of the other American one or two states that have legalized euthanasia. So once again, the issue is being fudged, and that of course doesn't help when you try to figure out what's happening with the number of cases of euthanasia, what they're for and all that sort of thing. So, again, the figures would be very suspect because of that sort of fudging of the issue.
So you think we are safe at the moment in New Zealand?
Well, death certificates are always a bit difficult to fill out, but we're doing, I'm sure, I think we've got the best that we can achieve at the moment, but if euthanasia comes in, we won't know how many cases are being performed every year, because it won't be on the death certificates. There's supposed to be a reporting system in the New Zealand bill separate to the death certificate where a registrar of end-of-life issues is appointed, and each case is supposed to be reported directly to that person. So that would be the way in which the government thinks that it would be keeping a grip on what's actually happening. But we know from overseas experience that up to 40% of cases of euthanasia are not actually reported using official reporting systems. And the reasons are many, but the most one is that most doctors think that the administration is too time-wasting and they don't really need to do it anyway, and so they just fudge the death certificate and that's it.
I've also heard that some people would like to have euthanasia because when they cannot live in their own houses anymore, they'd rather die than going into a rest home.
Yes, I think that does happen to some extent, but people are resistant to going into rest homes because they realize that it is a step towards the end of life. But in fact, although rest homes get some bad publicity, my experience in general is that they are not difficult places to live in for a lot of people. And my mother had Alzheimer's disease towards the end of her life. She died just before she was 90. And she was cared for in a local rest home for 3 or 4 years when we couldn't do it any longer. And the quality of the care that she got was wonderful. I was really, really impressed. And it wasn't just my mother that was getting it. It was a lot of other people's mothers as well.
I remember Sister Kathy Lynch during the meeting, she also mentioned the case of a man from north of Auckland who said, well, he didn't want to live anymore because he had no family members. And then they found out that he had a nephew.
That was my patient. That was my patient.
It was you.
It was me telling that story, not her.
Okay.
yes, that's right. That was a really interesting one where this man came in wanting, absolutely demanding to be euthanized. He said he was a loner and had no family and no friends, and then within a week or less we discovered that he did actually have some family. It was a nephew he hadn't seen for years in Whangarei, and so we got him down and his family, and they came down and they visited uncle, and they had a great time, wonderful weekend, and then so they started coming regularly to visit him. In the meantime, the nurses had found that he was a real old sweetie, and they started calling him sweetie, and he just reveled in it. But he did die eventually, and we were able to keep him really comfortable. And on the last ward round that I did, a few days before he died, he said to me, "Doctor, you know, I wouldn't have missed these last 4 weeks for all the tea and shine." He said, "I've really had a wonderful time." He said, "Joining up with the family again has been wonderful." And these nurses, he said, "My word, they're a bunch of angels, you know." And it was just, you know, demonstrating really how a bit of love and tender care can change a person's view, really, and there is such a thing as a good death, you know. And he was a jolly good example of it.
So that's really a good example of by caring mercifully.
Yeah.
Is helpful, and at least this person would not demand euthanasia because he had a good time at the end of his life.
He did, that's right.
And I think, but Sister Cathy mentioned that there were several patients who, during the last weeks or months of their lives, they had real quality of life because they could meet with their families and with what you said, that you have enough pain relief, so you can reduce the pain.
See, well, I think that those last days and weeks of life are really very important, because a lot of people have issues that they need to get fixed up, and it ranges from things like family relationships, right through to what you want to give away, you know, whether you want to check your will over again, getting in touch with people that you haven't seen for a long time. It just makes a huge difference if you've got some time to do that. And one of the things I think that euthanasia does is probably cut all that sort of thing short, because you need time to have those things happen. And euthanasia won't allow that for a lot of people.
Yeah, and it's difficult for somebody to have somebody else to decide on your life. That's even worse when what you mentioned, that it's not always decided by the person who said that they wanted to die.
That's right.
Thank you very much, David. Would you give me another example? It would be great. Full of knowledge.
One of my friends wrote about a case that she had seen. She was a nurse in a rest home. And there was this lovely lady who was into her late 80s who was constantly asking to be euthanized. She just wanted to have her life ended. She was miserable. She had there's no point in her living. She'd lived long enough. It's the sort of thing you hear quite often, you know, in a rest home. And she started in to stop eating and drinking, and she was going downhill fast. And my friend went off duty on the Friday, and absolutely certain that when she got back there on the Monday, the lady would no longer be with us. Anyway, when she came back in on the Monday morning, here she was. This lady was sitting on the side of a bed, dressed, and she'd had a big breakfast, and she was ready to go. What had made the difference? Well, she'd just discovered that her granddaughter was going to have another baby, and they'd asked her to knit a cardigan for this baby, and she had to knit this cardigan, and she wasn't going to die until she'd knitted a cardigan. And so she had this whole new focus in life, you see, which made life worthwhile. And I think that's the problem with a lot of people. They don't actually have a focus. They're not doing anything useful.
Yeah.
And one of the things we should be thinking about is, how can we make people more useful? And one of the things I think about a lot of rest home care is it's great care, but they think that by caring for people, they are actually doing them a lot of good. In fact, it would be better to let people care a bit more for themselves and get involved in, you know, why can't they peel the potatoes and stuff like that, you know, and really do something useful.
Yeah.
Clean their own rooms, vacuum them out, you know, stuff like that.
Thank you very much. And I think one of the dangers is also that it's for, as you said earlier, it's all age groups can be concerned, and that's a real concern. And it's important to know what it means, what the definition is, and so we'll have to be aware of it. Thank you very much, David. And to our listeners, what is coming up in our Mercy Spirituality Center? From Sunday, 6th of December, to Saturday, 12th of December, Sister Christina Cathro will facilitate a 6-day live-in retreat. This will be the last event for our Year of Roots 2015. Our program for 2016 with the theme Year of the Unfolding is available online on our website, and the booklets have been sent out to parishes and individuals. Please let us know if you would like us to send you a program for 2016. You can contact us per phone at 09 for Auckland 638-6238 or through our website at www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. I wish you all a good Friday and a good week ahead.